This week, I watched a series of documentaries that I didn't realize would change the way I looked at the world, at gender, and at myself. But it did. I had read about the series in the New York Times several months ago. The article explained how a woman took a camera all over the world, filming herself and other women talking, sharing stories, observing their lives, revealing their thoughts and experiences around sexuality, relationships, choices, and fears. I was immediately intrigued, so when I heard that the series was coming to San Francisco, not only did I have to see it, but I wanted to interview the filmmaker. So I did. Today on Sight Unseen, we'll be listening to the words of filmmaker Jennifer Fox, whose film, Flying: Confessions of a Free Woman, is opening across the country and the world. Flying takes viewers on a trip to New York, South Africa, Germany, England, Pakistan, India, and 12 other countries, inviting us into the intimate spaces and lives of women Fox met on her travels. The inspiration for Flying was that Fox realized that women speak differently than men, especially when brought together. Beyond that, Fox was, well, a seemingly free woman, unmarried, without children, and in her 40s. So different from many of her counterparts, this left her wondering who she was as a woman. Wasn't she supposed to be married? And what was the universal experience around not just sharing stories, but understanding one's womanhood? Flying: Confessions of a Free Woman is playing this weekend at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. My name is Tani Katenjian. This is Sight Unseen. I spoke with Jennifer Fox when she was here for the premiere of the film. She was on her way to London, where it will be premiering next week. This is part one of a two-part interview. Stay tuned for her insights and more.
You know, I have a very strange background, is that I didn't really identify with being a woman, as you know, from the film, for much of my life. So in my 30s, I sort of had this big wake-up call, which was like, Jesus, I'm having these great conversations with my girlfriends, and they're different than the ones I'm having with men. And it's actually these conversations that are holding me together, because the men come and go, but my girlfriends remain. And in my case, I have girlfriends all over the world, and one of them actually that really changed my life lives in London, and we would just always sit and talk around a cup of tea or food or whatever. So it was this light bulb. So the initial idea was, gee, I want to make a film about the way women speak. And I molded and molded for a long time, and I just couldn't see the story in it. And then the next kind of key for the film was that I was actually running a training program in South Africa, and was the only woman on the team, like normal, and met these two young South African women who were like the secretaries, of course. And, you know, at one of the breaks, we went in a corner and we started to talk. And here one was African from a township. One was colored from another township. So different class, different culture, different race. And we were absolutely saying the same thing. And it was like another light bulb. Like, Jesus, is this language, is the way we speak, is it cross-cultural? And then I thought, what am I going to do? What's the story? Well, I'll pick three women, three different countries. But you know, every filmmaker thinks that if you don't know what to do, pick three. So,
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. That's the key, three. So, and I sort of was like blah on that idea. And then accidentally just kind of came into the realization that I was in a real crisis. And I was in my early 40s. I just broke up with a very important love relationship that I thought was the one. And I just saw that, Jesus, I'm different than those normal people over there that are married with kids. And my life didn't look traditional, and yet I still yearned for some very traditional things, and I was very stuck in very traditional ideas. So it dawned on me that I should pick up the camera to literally be able to see myself. Like, I couldn't place myself in the world, which is weird. When you get into, by the time you get to your 40s, not being married, not having kids, it's like, well, how do I fit? You know, what am I going to do, put 10 men on the wall? That kind of feeling. So that was sort of the last bit. But the real key, because the next problem was, well, Jesus, how am I going to film myself and how am I going to film these women's conversations without destroying them? And because I thought if I had a camera person, the conversation would collapse. Or even if I put the camera on a tripod, it would collapse. So then I came up with this idea of passing the camera. And it really seemed to mirror the way we talk anyway. It's horizontal, it's circular, it's endless. So those were sort of the four ideas in the whole thing. And passing the camera was really a central idea in a way that in another film, you know, story would be. Because all I thought is I'll film myself, I'll film my girlfriends, I'll film the women in my family, and the strangers I meet around the world, because I wanted to see if it's random also. If the way women speak is sort of not just my girlfriends, but sort of similar around the world with any woman, and also are the things we're dealing with similar. I wanted to see with, again, get out of my own circle and just meet women, as you begin to see I do in the later episodes. So are we same or different? What do we share?
I thought, and I want to go over those 4 points, but just talking about meeting women, that was one thing that I thought was really beautiful and powerful about the piece, was that a woman would invite you to come visit her and you would actually do it, you know, like Svetlana or Paramita, exactly, you know, and you would actually take them up on it. And that takes so much guts, I thought, and confidence and trust. And I don't know, I just want to talk a little bit about it.
I mean, I'm lucky in a sense because I've always been a traveler, you know, and my fantasy even as a child was to travel. So as soon as I could, I mean, I was hitchhiking around Europe and Australia and America from the time I was a teenager alone. So I have that knowledge of how to do it sort of thing. Like, I love that feeling of arriving in a place and you know nothing and you have to rely on the kindness of strangers. And this film just allowed me to do that again as an adult, or in a different way as an adult, because I had this other need, which is to talk to diverse women. And the camera, in a sense, is an excuse, because I'd love to do it, you know, anyway, but you don't. You know, the film gave me a really good excuse to go figure out who am I in relation to other women around the world. And that was really powerful. But I love that feeling. I love that feeling when you're out of control and your life depends on others. And people feel it and they take care of you. I mean, you see how the women in the film just sort of adopt me, like, oh, there's Jennifer, the dog. We have to put her to bed and we have to feed her and make sure she survives in India and Pakistan. It's really like... And that's another reason why there is no camera person. There isn't a crew. If I had a crew with me, and this is a very filmmaker speak, but you tend to bond backwards. You bond with your crew. You go home to your hotel, whatever. When you're solo with a camera, and one of the rules of the film was that I had to sleep or stay with the people I was filming. And so I'm alone with this little camera. You know, people want to take care of you, and I needed them. And that's very important to the dynamic of the film. That is what happened to me when I was younger traveling, but now I'm just incorporating that into a film.
Well, you needed them, practically speaking, just to delve deeper into these questions that you had, I mean, particularly about the way in which women communicate. But emotionally, you were going through such a difficult time, and you really needed all these women to be a reflection of you.
I really did. I mean, I really needed to figure out who I was, and I was, you know, basically asking everyone, honestly, you know, like, help me because I cannot figure this out. And the value of being able to do it with all these women that I don't know is that you get answers that sometimes your friends don't have or won't say. Like Paramita saying to me, well, you don't know anything about love. You only know about passion. And that was like, you know, I think you're really right. But, you know, someone in my own culture, in my own world, would never say that to me. Maybe they might think it, or maybe they just wouldn't have that kind of cultural difference to see it. So it's really powerful for me. It really helped. It changed my life.
The way you say it right now does sound kind of harsh, that she said, what you just don't know about love, you only know about passion. And actually the way it comes across in the film. It's still very, it's compassionately said. It's not coddling, but it's compassionate. She's just kind of observing and sharing rather than attacking or competing, which I think, I didn't even think of bringing this up until right now, but I think that some women often feel like there's this competition when women come together, and you didn't get a sense of that at all in this film, not at all. It was just truly a support network that I thought was very beautiful. Now that I'm further thinking about that, to what extent do you think the camera's presence, or for each person in the group to be able to use the camera and that sort of autonomy or empowerment, helped with that softness and support?
I think for me, the camera was bringing a kind of presence. Often when a camera shows up, people disappear. You lose presence, and they become like they're acting. Let me tell you about my life. Let me tell you a story. As a filmmaker, that's the last thing I want. I want people to be on film. And something about handing the camera around and having everybody hold it and everybody get in, people get really excited and they enjoy it. It's like, oh, I can do this. This is great. Oh. So there's an energy that's brought. And then they kind of, all limits are off. Because one of my rules for myself was that I would be absolutely honest. Quickly, people realized that they could ask me anything. If you can ask somebody anything, then suddenly the intimacy goes really deep. And then that also implies that I can ask them anything. And so somehow the camera's role was, it brought attention, excitement, and somehow distracted people away from their normal self-consciousness. So we were just having a great conversation. The other thing is, I'm filming continuously. So I'm not turning on and off the camera. So there's no sense of judgment. There's just the sense, oh, this is just like a talking stick. And we're going to go on and on for hours. There's no like, oh, gee, we hit the 1 hour point, let's stop. So I'm rolling, you know, actually we shot 1,600 hours of tape. So I'm rolling and rolling tape. But people feel that. They feel that it's an experiment. And so they don't present, they are. And I think this technique of passing the camera had a great effect. And I highly encourage people to try it. In fact, on our website, flyingconfessions.com, we're asking people to submit their passing the camera stories. Because it actually, it's better than therapy, weirdly. It's like somehow you show up, you calm down, you put aside time, and there you are really focused to three or four people in a very honest way.
A good friend of mine has doesn't pass the camera in the sense she has a women's group that they meet with every week. Right. And she says she would use part of what you just said to describe what that experience is like, right, for her. You show up, it's concentrated time, it's several women, and you're, you know, being extremely honest and very deep, and it's better than therapy.
I think that's what women have always done for each other. That's why I think was one of the instigators to make this film, is the realization that, gee, I'm much more interested in talking to women because men are so boring. You know, because sometimes the level is just so superficial, but you meet a woman at a party, you don't know her, and boom, you know, you're in there talking about relationships and connection and feelings. And so I think that women probably historically have always depended on women to solve their lives. I think that there's a new phenomenon where we've all gotten so in, especially in the Western world, into psychoanalysis and therapy, that somehow that in some ways, while positive, and there's many great things about therapy, has also had a negative effect, is that sometimes we don't turn to our friends in the same way. And the other thing I feel is that sometimes therapy makes us think that our problems are personal, and kind of disconnects the fact that they're actually much bigger than us. Flying, for me, making Flying was a way to see that my life, a lot of the things that I thought were so unique, were actually about gender. You know, the way my mother and grandmom treated me, the way my father treated me, my sexual abuse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are universal. I mean, you can go into many families across the globe and find the same patterns. At the same time, you can go back in time and find the same patterns. And it was really liberating to get out of that therapy model also and get into kind of a wider web of women that is beyond class and culture.
In the film, there's a very brief moment where we see you with your therapist, who I assume you've been seeing for 20 years or something around there.
Not her, but others.
Oh, not her, but others. So did you decide to not do that anymore as a result of this project?
Well, actually, around the time of the idea of this project, I quit therapy. And maybe this was the way to fill in that space, but maybe not, because I think quitting therapy by definition also makes you depend more on your friends. And again, I don't want to diss therapy because I think it can be a very powerful tool. But what we sometimes don't talk about is the negative side. And the idea that, you know, even the Freudian idea that everything has a source back to your parents can be useful, but after a while can be really detrimental. So I had just quit therapy around the time of making the film. So that was one of the rare times I saw her, and I think it was an emergency session kind of thing.
Now, one of the things that I don't, you know, just bringing up in relation to your previous comment, just realizing that things are really about gender. When I was asking someone about another interview you'd had with someone else, they had said that you'd been asked a lot about, you know, men and women rights and whether men and women are equal and all these questions that I would associate with an interview, say, with a feminist.
Right.
It wasn't, I didn't even consider any of those questions because I didn't necessarily see you as a feminist.
Right.
But maybe that was, I'd like to find out your reaction about that. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of strange because I've been really in the closet with my political ideas till my 40s. Because my dad is a right-wing Republican, and I never thought about it, but somehow I just didn't have a political opinion, and probably unconsciously I knew that if I had one, I would go butt heads with him in a way that would destroy our relationship, and probably it took to my 40s to be able to face that split. So making the film has politicized me, but you can see that I don't start out political at all on the gender issue. And I would say now, post-film, I've become quite political. Mm-hmm. I always feel bad, and I'm glad you asked, that people ask me political questions, because I'm like, you know, the new kid on the block. It's like, I have a political opinion, and I think da-da-da-da-da-da. But in reality, you know, the only thing I can speak about is, you know, what I've realized in flying is so much of the hurt I've suffered in my life is related to my gender, and that is universal. And I can speak about that, and I can see that, you know, and also I'm 48 years old, so you have this perspective of, like, you know, almost five decades, and it is important, that perspective. It's like, where would I have been if I couldn't have had an abortion? You know, I would be really, excuse me, really messed up. It's not that I don't want to have babies, and you know from the film that what happens with the whole baby thing, but it's that I would have been a terrible mom at 20 and 25 and 30. And there's just, I know that. And not only that, because I was someone who had to work. So I know those things. I also know that thinking of having a child now without childcare, public childcare, national childcare, is like really scary, because how am I going to afford it, and how am I going to work? And all these things have dawned on me now. So I have become political, but I'm very kind of naive also. So I'm glad you don't want to ask me a whole lot of feminist questions, but I would say now I am a feminist, but if you asked me 10 years ago, I would have said no.
Well, it's just an interesting definition of a feminist. I think, unfortunately, the term feminist, you know, like, I would say my mom is a feminist, but you would never think of her as a feminist in the sense that she's not, you know, out there fighting for, you know, getting rid of her bra or fighting for women's rights. But, you know, when it comes up, you know, about her identity as a woman, her career as a woman, you know, the things that she's done as a single mom, all of these things, then she really is a feminist. So I think the terminology is a slippery one.
For me also, and again, it might be age, but when feminism was, you know, really blossoming, it was a dirty word in my house. You know, oh, those feminists, they're ball busters, and they're this, and they're, you know, kind of butch kind of women. And you know, I modeled myself how to be anything but that. And what it did to me was, you know, I always tried to have kind of a soft feminine outside, but inside, I am really tough. And it's just that you can't show it, you know, because you're a girl. And that's the way I managed. And I think that also is so universal, you know, and so historical that women had to hide their power because it wasn't feminine.
So another thing that inspired you to make the film based on what you're telling me is that, well, you had this major breakup, and I'm assuming the breakup was you had found the one, but 2 years into it, he had decided that he has commitment issues. Surprise, surprise.
you were listening. You watched the film. It's so exciting.
So what was definitely. So what questions did that bring up for you? I know you've said, you know, how do I identify myself without a mate like that?
What I saw when I broke up with this guy was that there was inside of me a fantasy, which was that even though I didn't want to get married, and I did want kids by then, but I didn't want a traditional life, I still had that inner voice saying, you know, someday you will have a real life. And a real life meant marriage, kids, and a house in the suburbs. And I didn't want those things, but the imprint on me was so deep that when this guy who was the one that had come at the perfect time, I was like 38 years old, you know, perfect timing. When it didn't work out, it was like, it made me see the fantasy of, you know, the Prince Charming, someday you'll have a life. And it also made me see that I'd been waiting, you know, that I had in my mind somehow split, that this life I'd been leading, making films all over the world, having love affairs, lots of friends, was in my mind not real, because someday real life would kick in, and that was marriage and kids. And I don't believe that consciously, but unconsciously I saw it come to the forefront, and that's when I sort of went, you know, I'm not free at all, and my life doesn't look like that. So if I can't accept what my life looks like, then I'm really in a big problem. So for me, flying was about saying, okay, what does my life look like? It isn't the kid, the house in the suburbs, the perfect guy. It's something else. And it was like I was so caught up in the dream of what my life should be as a woman that I couldn't appreciate what it was. So like I remember picking up the camera and going, wow, I have a really nice loft. Oh, gee, I have really nice friends. This doesn't look so bad at all. It's like I needed the camera to literally see. I have a lot of friends. You know, that's a pretty cool party there. Like, you know, things like that that I didn't value. It's like I totally devalued my life because it didn't fit. And I think that that is classic. I remember when I was thinking about making the film long before I started, I had a conversation with a woman who was about 38 in Paris, and she called it the someday I'll have a life syndrome, and that a lot of modern Western women go through. So that was a big impetus for the film. It was like I was so sick of hiding my real life and not saying, well, yeah, I have had 10 boyfriends, and you know I love 5 of them, and the other 5 I slept with because, or maybe 20, or yes, I've had abortions, or yes, I've done this and this and this. And just saying, this is a real female life. You know, for better or worse, I may look like a whore to you. To me, I'm not a whore. But I just felt like I needed to stand up, and not just for myself, because so many of my girlfriends are leading secret lives. I mean, we talk about it in private, but nobody talks about it publicly. So I really felt, I felt I had to do it for me and for us. As I, and not that I'm heroic, but I needed, look, I needed to do it for me first. And it made me kind of appreciate what I had first and foremost. And then it, I began to sort of work with it. Okay, what's stopping you from having the relationship you want? Or why do you think you need a husband to have kids? Like, get over it. You know, this is 2000 and something. We're in the millennium. You really, you know, I still had those ideas. So even though, again, I looked free, I had very traditional values. And the film was about really checking them out and working through, in a sense, and really allowing others' women's lives to show me the way, like my girlfriends in South Africa, who are really, you know, were leading really satisfying lives as single moms. Okay, if they can do it, why can't I? I'm not fighting for, by the way, this is a heterosexual, my story is heterosexual. I'm certainly not fighting for that in any way. It can be a lesbian story. It can be a woman who decides not to have a relationship. It's just about accepting and being whole and not being ashamed.
Were you surprised by who you discovered in yourself while you were, when you first started making this film, when you, I mean, how surprised were you? I mean, I know that you were saying, well, I do have great friends. I have a beautiful loft. Yes, I know those are surprises, so to speak, but I'm talking about a little bit more deeper kind of understanding of yourself that I'd like you to share with me. You know, the process was to understand yourself deeper, unravel yourself like an onion, you know, kind of peel away the layers to get a sense of why you feel the way you do and what motivates you and why you are in the place that you are in your life. And
I think it is this kind of opposite movement than therapy. You know, flying was not, it was about going inside, but it was about going outside and using the world to learn from. So, you know, what I discovered was the world. I spent a long time thinking about myself before that. But what I discovered was the world and these very diverse yet familiar women that I really fell in love with. And I think, if anything, I mean, one of the strange results is I feel like my heart is all over the world now, because there's so many people I met making Flying who are in the film and some that aren't in the film that I love, and I just can't see them all the time. Like, why can't I go to India and go talk to Paramita now? Do you know? Or why can't I go to Pakistan? Or why can't I see Chantal in Cambodia, you know? And that bit. But I think what I really discovered was other women, and also that knowing that if I ever get down, I need to go out and talk to people. I mean, talking to people is the greatest kind of healer of all time, because when we share, and that's very female, but when we share, we shift, you know, and we heal.
Those were the words of filmmaker Jennifer Fox, speaking about her film, Flying, Confessions of a Free Woman. The film is playing this weekend at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, and will also show on the Sundance Channel later this year. It's a 6-part series, well worth the time. To learn more about the film, please visit flyingconfessions.com. To get showtimes or tickets at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, please visit ybca.org. This is Sight Unseen. My name is Tani Katenjian. This was part one of a 2-part interview. You're listening to KALX in Berkeley.